Welcome to the Conceive, Believe, and Achieve podcast. Today's guest is Alfonso Carter. He's got a little bit of a history in some sports, and the one I want to talk about today is not hockey. I know you got a little bit of background in hockey, but we want to talk about your adventure in the sport of football.
Yeah.
So you grew up playing football, I'm assuming. Where did you start?
I started playing organized football probably when I was about 10 or 11 years old. I played for the Thompson Park Cowboys in Scarborough for years. My dad was a huge football fan. I believe the Bears and the Steelers were his... No, the Bears and the Raiders were his favorite teams.
Okay.
Hence why I'm a diehard Raiders fan. but yeah, I used to sit on my dad's lap when I was a kid. We'd watch football every Sunday, watch the Argos. He was a huge Argos fan. Loved CFL when I was a kid as well. And then finally, he allowed me to play contact football when I was 10 years old. Played for the Thompson Park Cowboys for a year or two, I believe. Team wasn't that good, but I enjoyed it. I played really well. And then fast forward, I started playing high school football once I got to high school.
So let's go back to your when you first started. What was the position that you started there?
I was actually a running back.
I
was very fast when I was a kid. Loved track and field. That was also one of my first loves. I actually grew up around the same area where Ben Johnson lived.
Okay.
At Meadowvale and the 401 there. So I remember as a kid seeing Ben and his washing his Ferrari outside his mom's house and stuff when I was a kid. So I think every kid wanted to be like the next Ben Johnson when we were younger. So yeah, grew up loving track and then just proceeded to play football when I was a kid outside during recess.
So recess and then after school program. How often were you actually playing as a 10-year-old?
So we'd probably practice 2 days a week and then we'd have a game. I believe it was either Thursday or Friday evening. It was kind of like Friday Night Lights. So my dad was a truck driver, so he never really got to come out and watch me play because he worked long shifts. So my brother, who was probably my biggest fan, my older brother, he took me to a lot of my games and stuff and practices when my dad couldn't take me. So
nice.
And
so you, so your brother was there for you, your dad. What was it like when you did have your dad to watch you there?
Oh, it was amazing. I think I scored my first touchdown when my dad was there. Like I said, our team wasn't the greatest. I think me and myself and one of my best friends, we were the two running backs. We were also the two fastest guys and probably the two bigger guys on the team. I was bigger than my offensive lineman. So anytime either one of us got the ball, we probably had to avoid two or three guys before we could make any headway and try and gain some yards. So I remember vividly we were playing against the, I think the Lorne Park or the Lamoureux Rams, they were called. And they were a really good team. They kicked the ball off to us, and we hadn't scored a touchdown all year. And I got the ball on the kickoff, and I think I ran it back like 90 yards for a touchdown.
As a 10-year-old, you must have been just...
So I was pretty excited, so...
Yeah,
I was going to spike the ball, but I remember our coaches saying we don't spike the ball.
Tell me a little bit about your coaches in the beginning of the formative years of your football.
They were very, you know what, because it was my first year playing organized football. They made it, number one, enjoyable. Number one, they allowed me to have fun and learn. They didn't really, I don't want to say they weren't strict, but they were hard on us, but in a way to push us and kind of motivate us to get us better. So,
what did they do to make it enjoyable? Like football's a smash them up.
It is. To make it enjoyable, I guess they wouldn't make it seem like everything was a big deal if you made a mistake. You know what I mean? If you made a mistake, that they'd pull you aside and talk to you and let you know it happens, you're learning the game. It's all a part about growing as an athlete, growing as a person. So our coaches were really good. They made it fun. We'd do different football drills, like the Oklahoma drill. I don't know if a lot of you guys know that, but...
Explain that drill, because it's actually outlawed now. Sports can't do it.
So you'd pretty much be... The way we ran it, where they put... two pylons 5 yards apart from each other. One person would be lying, well, two football players would be lying down, one would have a ball in their hand. Blow the whistle, you have to get up off your back, and pretty much the ball carrier has to, they didn't want you making a move, you pretty much had to run the person over, mm-hmm. and vice versa, the defensive player, you couldn't go for an ankle tackle, you got to let him up, mm-hmm. chest on chest, helmet on helmet, back of mm-hmm. it, and
yeah, I think they got rid of that.
Best man wins. So
yeah, they got rid of that for the concussion reason. Concussion. I think a little more so.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
A little more safer these days.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, one of the things I started to notice back in the day when I was playing, we had knee pads like on the and now we start watching football. It's been cut off at the thighs, and I'm like, man.
I know. Yeah. It's so true because I remember when I was in high school, I had pads everywhere because if I'm coming up with a forearm, because when I got to high school, mm-hmm. fast forward, I got bigger but still was pretty fast. So I was playing on the defensive line. Mm-hmm. So I had forearm pads that wrapped around, that covered my knuckles and my forearms.
I remember those.
Had the elbow pads. I wore the full knee pads. Mm-hmm. Well, nowadays, guys don't wear the hip or the kidney protectors.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Just,
yeah, you know what I mean? And that's mm-hmm. all stuff that... It was mandated. Tailbone pad, all that stuff was mandated. Mm-hmm. When I play, I had the neck roll, the big honking neck roll, like that to protect me in case my head snapped back. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So, you fast forward, we're getting into high school.
Yeah.
What was your decision as to, you know, okay, I'm going to play football in high school? Because some kids would have said, you know what, you know, I'm good at it, but I want to go on to something else, right?
Yeah.
Because high school is just this brand new thing where you flourish.
Exactly. And I think, to be honest with you, I never played my grade 9 year.
Okay.
I was going to try out for football, but I was new to high school, kind of wanted to focus on school and just getting acclimated to the high school life and things like that. So I didn't play football my first year, which I kind of regret because mm-hmm. The team ended up going on and winning the junior championship that year. Mm-hmm. Ended up playing rugby. The coaches asked me to come out and play rugby. So I played rugby. And I think that was the only one sport that I played my grade 9 year. And then
now, how did you find rugby? Because I played rugby as well, I'll get your opinion on it. Right. But how did you find it?
It was different. Yeah. You don't get one thing I noticed in rugby. You don't get the serious collisions you get in football because mm-hmm. in football you have the pads on, you can run a lot harder and without any reckless abandon, you can just go out there and just mm-hmm. lay somebody out. In rugby, you have to be more cautious when making tackles. Mm-hmm. There's more form tackling, I feel, in rugby. Mm-hmm. You get the nagging injuries, bruises, cuts, things like that. But you get the more serious collisions in football.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I found, and this maybe is just my opinion, but when I did rugby, I thought, man, because I played both football and rugby.
Yeah.
And... it takes a lot more cardio to operate on the rugby field.
1,000%. I remember going to rugby tryouts and the hills and just the conditioning that they made us do, it actually helped me with football the following year.
Yeah.
So when we started doing conditioning my grade 10 year for football, just knowing, because we had the same coaches that coached football, coached rugby, mm-hmm. like, it got me in the best shape I was probably in throughout high school.
So, bang. Yeah. So now you're 1 year rugby, and then you've like, what's changed your mind now?
I was motivated by watching CFL football, college football, NFL football, just that love that I had when I was a kid when I first started playing, started coming back. And again, as the year went on, I regretted not playing football my grade 9 year, and I was like, I'm definitely going to go out for the football team. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the coaches and players on the team were asking me, make sure you come out for football. So
you're being nagged?
Yeah, pretty much. And my older brother was playing on the senior team. So a lot of his teammates and players on the senior team were saying that your brother should be playing football, because I hear a lot of good things about him, that he's a good athlete, so mm-hmm. he should try out for the football team. So
yeah that was my indoctrination into football. My brother was a pretty good football player, and of course the coach was nagging me as well, and I was in grade, I think it was grade 9, you know, in grade 10 he says, don't go for junior, I want you up for senior. So I ended up playing senior.
Nice.
But I know it's just it was a constant, you know, nagging, and you felt, oh, well, I've got to go now. But yeah. How did you feel? Now, you got your brother on the senior team.
Right.
So now you've got to play up to par. He set a standard for you.
Yeah. No, my brother was a very good football player. He played outside linebacker, defensive end. Mm-hmm. And I always loved playing defense. I'd mm-hmm. rather be the one attacking and hitting somebody and then instead of someone coming at me all the time. So
yeah.
I had that defensive mentality. So fast forward, grade 10, tried out for football, made the team. Mm-hmm. And I think we went undefeated
mm-hmm.
our that junior season.
Nice. Ended up
pretty much running the tables and beating everybody. Mm-hmm. So
what was the pressure like at home with your brother?
Oddly enough, he was more encouraging because he saw the talent that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was my first year really playing organized football on the defensive side. So he saw the raw talent that I had, so he constantly encouraged me. I remember I'd grab my football pads and he'd have his football pads and we'd work on things in the backyard.
Nice.
Like for hours.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I honed my skills doing that.
Mm-hmm.
My grade 10 year, had a really good year. Coaches at one point were saying they thought about bringing me up to the senior team
mm-hmm.
to help them out and stuff. Because the senior team that year, they were good, but they weren't as good as some of the powerhouses back then. I think McDonald was like the powerhouse
mm-hmm.
in high school back then when I was playing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So brother's helping you out.
Yep.
You're, he's starting to see a little bit of magic in your feet or whatever it was,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Had you decided what position that you wanted to play, or how did you decide?
So, loved the Raiders, mm-hmm. And I loved the Argos, but my favorite player growing up was Bruce Smith.
Okay.
Loved him as a defensive player. I just loved his passion, his aggression, just how fast he was being so big and just how athletic he was.
No, I might be wrong, but yep. Bruce Smith sounds like he was a Buffalo Bills.
Yes, he was.
Okay, so I'm right.
Yeah, Bruce Smith played for the Buffalo Bills and hands down was probably one of the best defensive players in the league for a number of years.
Yeah, man, he was a monster.
Yeah, he was very, very much so.
And that's probably the only reason why I know his name because, you know, during the time that he was playing, you know, he was feared. And I think that was probably during the time when the Bills
went on that run.
Yeah, four Super Bowls in a row with Jim Kelly, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they had a defense too.
Yeah, they had a relentless defense. So, yeah, he was one of my favorite players.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, and also Derek Thomas, who played for the Kansas City Chiefs as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yeah.
Those were probably the two most influential players that I kind of try to model my game after.
Yeah.
So
you at home, you get influenced by brother and dad, kind of. Yeah. Then the television is starting to throw images at you too as well.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
And you go into the backyard and you're working out with your brother on technique and football.
Yeah.
Are you hitting the gym too, or...?
Oddly enough, my brother kind of didn't want me hitting mm-hmm. hitting weights too early because mm-hmm. He was 4 years older than me.
Yeah.
So he knew I was still growing, so I think I went on another growth spurt when I was in grade 10.
Mm-hmm.
I was probably about 5'8", 5'9", in grade 9, and then I grew close to 6 feet by my grade 10 years. So, he didn't want me touching weights. He said, just continue loving the game and just be a natural athlete.
It's kind of good that he did that, you know. And years later you start learning more and more about things that you've done. But I've talked to some strength training coaches, actually Vern Gambetta, who I've had on the show before. He was an expert in strength training. He's trained he worked with the Kansas City Chiefs, the Chicago Bulls, the Chicago White Sox, the 49ers.
Yep.
And one of the things he says is that the weight training in the gym doesn't transfer to the athletic domains. You have to find specific sports-related movements to produce power in those positions. And, of course, football... Back then, it would have been, oh, you're a football player? Here, go and do some power cleans or go and do some, you know, deadlifts and get you strong. When he did that, he was playing for Fresno State.
Right.
And he said that, you know, it was just ridiculous what they were putting him through. Cause,
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you're not lifting weights, so your brother's smart at this. You, and you're getting to the point where, you know, you get on the senior team. Are you, did you ever get to play on the senior team with
him? No, not in grade 10, I didn't. But again, I think after the grade 10 year, going into grade 11 was when I tried out for the senior team and made it. So
okay. Yeah. What are your coaches like there?
They were good. So the senior coaches were my rugby coaches, so they knew about me. And they encouraged me to try out for the senior year. So my grade 11 year made the senior team. Again, the senior team had majority guys that were in grade 12 and OAC years. So it was a very, very mature roster. I think they only took maybe 4 or 5 grade 11s that year. So, and the good thing is I ended up becoming a starter. So
yeah,
it was so pretty fortunate.
All that work that you did at home with brother, and you know, all that training and that influence on TV, that paid off for you. So immediately, boom, you're starting for the team. You're starting at what position?
I was starting at defensive end, defensive tackle.
And when did you start to notice that you were kind of different when it comes to, you know, your abilities on the field than some of the other kids that... You started right away, and you're in grade 11. That's what I'm getting at is you're starting to show that you're a little more dominant in these positions, and you're young.
I'd say probably, I don't want to say the first game, but I know after some of our first football games and stuff, when some of the coaches were kind of that we're playing against were starting to double team me a lot more. Like, I wasn't getting blocked one-on-one anymore. Like, they were, like, literally sending a guard and a tackle to block me in certain situations. So I think that's kind of when, because I'd tell my coaches, I'm like, coach, I'm getting double teamed all the time here. And my coaches were like, well, you're a good player and you're causing problems in the backfield because they can't block you. So that's a good thing. So it should free up other guys. So that kind of pushed me and motivated me to work on different techniques and understanding the defensive game more, as far as understanding what teams are trying to do when double teaming and what were some of my options in regards to that. So
I like that, because it's like the growth mindset you talked earlier about, that when you know, you've got a situation where you're being stalled and you're trying to look for different answers, which is typical you know, successful athletes mindset, right? You get roadblocks and what do we do?
What are you going to do about it? Exactly. Let's figure it out.
Yeah, and a lot of people will just shut down and say, you know what, I give up. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And so be it. I'm getting double teamed, right? But you, athletic mindset or growth mindset that they call these days, you're pushing forward. So you're looking and you're studying the game. And, you know, it's becoming – did it become easier after you started studying?
You know what? I think – because, again, I don't want to say I have an obsessive compulsive sort of anything like that, but I know when I'm focused on a certain thing, and it's followed me, I think, throughout my entire life. I'll try and master something. I know I can't I'm not striving for perfection, but I'm striving for excellence. And that's one thing I kind of try and trickle down and translate to my kids as well. But I know in high school, like, I would literally watch football games and I'd watch my position only and see techniques of what was successful for certain guys in certain situations. And then I try and replicate that in practice, if we're doing one-on-one drills and things like that. So I'd, like, just focus on doing one thing over and over again until I mastered it. And then I try another move.
And folks, this is way before YouTube. So there was no instructional videos.
Exactly. No, none at all. I'd literally watch a full game and I'd be focused on one player and just see what worked. If whoever's the best defensive lineman on that team, I'd watch what they were doing. Like, I remember watching Notre Dame, and I don't know if you know Bryant Young, who's in the Hall of Fame right now, played for the 49ers. As a college football player, he was just a man amongst boys. Like, just physically dominant, fast, physical, smart, understood the game, knew angles on how to attack when attacking offensive linemen, and backtracking when trying to catch a running back from behind. So
So you started using these techniques from the television. Your studies from the television.
Pre-YouTube.
And what, so did you start seeing success almost right away?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Must have been a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, I think sometimes I focus more on that than my homework and studies because, I was just so obsessed about football, and I made it a decision, I think, when I was in grade 11 that I wanted to go somewhere in football. Mm-hmm. So,
and you did. Yeah. You went stateside. But let's talk about the recruiting process, because of course you're a young Canadian kid, and Canada is known for hockey, not football.
Exactly.
Of course, when you think of football, you think of the United States and Pop Warner and all that stuff down there.
Absolutely.
And we have a low population when it comes to football up here. In fact, I think talking to one of my guests before, who played on one of the GTA teams, he says that there's just people aren't coming out for the teams up here. So here you're a standout in Canadian football. You know, you got some attention from the States. How did that happen, and how are they seeing your games?
So literally after, I think it was after my first year senior, I'd always look up, it wasn't on the internet at the time, so I don't think there was internet. But these pamphlets we would get at our school about football camps.
Oh, yes.
So where they'd have CFL players and NFL players come to these football camps and stuff. So I'd always ask my dad, can I go to this camp? Can I go to this camp? Finally was able to go to one camp where a couple Argos players were there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember Darrell K. Smith. He was a wide receiver for the Argos back in the day. He was there. I think Pinball was there as well. And then a couple of other Argo players and a couple players from the Hamilton Tiger Cats were there as well.
Okay.
So I went to the camp, did pretty well there. And then from there was another recruitment camp. Back then, there was no, I think it was like Rivalries was like the U.S. Agency that kind of ranked U.S. players.
Mm-hmm.
There was a gentleman by the name, I don't know if he's still alive, but Ron Diaz.
Okay.
He was based out of Waterloo, and he was kind of like the Canadian recruitment guy for high school football players.
Okay.
So he had heard about me, invited me to this camp where he had a bunch of U.S. College scouts come down. So I went there, tested out fairly well. I didn't do too good on the strength test because, again, I never really lifted any weights. But all the athletic tests and stuff like that, I remember I probably had one of the fastest times in the 40 and also the 20-yard shuttle.
Okay.
I was running faster times than some guys that were probably 20, 30, 40 pounds lighter than I was.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of raised a lot of eyebrows. He had told me that some schools were starting to get interested in me.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll probably start reaching out to find out how you're doing and how the season's going.
Mm-hmm.
So that pretty much started the ball rolling in regards to the recruitment process.
Okay, and what would be the first school that contacted you?
University of Illinois.
Okay, and what did how did that letter or no, it was wasn't an email?
No, it wasn't an email. It was actually a phone call.
Okay.
I remember vividly my I think it was my aunt, because she lived she helped raise us when we were younger.
Mm-hmm.
She answered the phone and they asked to speak to, they said, oh, it's the University of Illinois, can I speak to Alfonso Carter? I'm named after my father.
Okay.
So they thought it was for my dad.
Okay.
And then she realized, because I'm a junior, so she calls me over, she says, Junior, I think there's someone on the phone here to speak with you. I thought it was for your father, but he says University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So my eyes popped wide open. I was like, are you serious? So got on the phone, spoke to the recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
They said they heard some things about me. They saw my numbers that I tested at the camp and stuff. Then they just said that they were interested in me and that they'd be following up as the season goes on.
So, okay.
And they were asking for game film and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then back in the day for game film.
Yeah. That was another process.
Yeah.
So I had let my high school coach know going into my grade 12 year that some schools have reached out in regards to recruiting, and they wanted game film, because we really didn't record film back then. Mm-hmm. This is in the early 90s, so he had reached out to, I guess, the AV, the drama class, and try to get a couple students to start recording the games. Mm-hmm. Which half the time they never follow.
Oh, no.
Follow properly. So yeah. I was fortunate enough, my brother, who had graduated and started working, actually hired someone to record the games just for me specifically. Okay. So they'd focus just on me. Mm-hmm. And what I was doing throughout the entire game.
Nice.
So and again, I owe it all. To this day, I tell him, like, if it wasn't for you, I probably would have never got my scholarship, my mm-hmm. older brother. So,
yeah. So you got those game films. Yep. I know you didn't go to the University of Illinois.
No, I did not.
What are the other schools that were interested?
Northern Illinois, I was close to going there. Okay. Oklahoma State.
Oh, there we go. I like that.
Yeah. Right. University of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. I was very interested in going there, but when the recruiter came down and saw me, he did tell me that I'd probably only be able to come home one time out of the year.
Yep.
Because it was so far away, and that kind of swayed my decision from going there. Mm-hmm. Then Iowa State reached out to me. Mm-hmm. Near the end of the recruiting process of my grade 12 going into my OEC year. Mm-hmm. And I was really interested in them because they were in a very good conference. They mm-hmm. weren't a super strong, they weren't a strong team at all back yeah. then, but
Big 12, right?
Yeah. It was a Big 8 back then. It okay. was only 8 teams. It was, Iowa State, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. Oklahoma State, Nebraska, all really good teams. Yeah. Kansas State, and Colorado.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. So you've got all these. Did you go on a recruiting trip? Did you fly out there? Did you drive down there?
Yeah, yep.
Tell me about one of your most or your favorite recruiting trips.
So technically, I only took one. I was going to go to Northern Illinois because a recruiter came to my school mm-hmm. To sit down and talk with me and tell me that they want to offer me a scholarship, and then we're going to try and set up a date. He knew that I was going to Iowa State that following weekend. So I flew out to Iowa State. Again, it's kind of like the movies where it's all the glitz and glamour. They take you out, show you around the campus, show you some of the team, some of the players.
Rub elbows with some of the cheerleaders.
Rub elbows with
some. I'm going to say that because I know you won't.
Yeah, exactly. Rub elbows with the cheerleaders and take you to a couple frat parties.
Yeah.
Wine and dine you. I remember we went out to this barbecue place. It probably was the best food I've ever had. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable. And one of the guys that I was that was on my recruiting trip, he's from Louisiana. Mm-hmm. He ended up going to University of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. We got along fantastic. And oddly enough, his quarterback was that ended up coming to Iowa State when I committed to Iowa State as well. So, okay. Yeah, we ended up...
Well, we just let it out of the bag. Yeah. Iowa State was the winner.
Yeah, Iowa State ended up being the reason, the school that I chose to go to.
And so. Why, out of all those schools, why would you pick Iowa State? What was the thing that dragged you right there?
Honestly, the defensive line coach, when he flew down, came to my house, spoke to my family. He was, like, he very much liked the way I played and how athletic I was, mm-hmm. and was comparing me to a couple of the other couple defensive linemen that he's coached in the past or tried to recruit in the past as well. So mm-hmm. he saw a vision in me of where he thought I could be in the team and stuff. So mm-hmm. and they were very upfront. They told me that most likely I probably wasn't going to play my first year. It's very rare that a defensive lineman or any lineman in particular as a freshman comes in because they physically have to get stronger because they're going against 21, 22, 23-year-old men. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was 18, 19, so.
Yeah. So you made the decision. You go in.
Yep.
You're the big man on campus. You get there, or you think you are.
You think you are until you get down there.
And yeah. Then you're like, what's the first practice like for Iowa State with you?
Honestly, it was bad. It was hell, yeah. Like, I was homesick. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing a lot of people don't realize. They see the glitz and glamour. Oh, yeah, you got a scholarship. You're going down to the States. It's going to be fun today, and you're going to enjoy it. But as an 18, 19-year-old kid, never being away from home, traveling to Midwest USA, where it was a bit of a culture shock as well. because we're only put Scarborough, it's a melting pot. A lot of different cultures. Going to Iowa, it was completely different.
I know because I've been there, and I know exactly what is in Iowa. Not a hell of a lot.
Not a hell of a lot. Yeah. Not a hell of a lot. But honest to God, some of my best friends that I'm still in contact with still are from Iowa.
Yeah.
Like some of the nicest people I have ever met in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good place to, I mean, being a parent.
Yeah.
You know, I'd send my kid down there because, you know, they're not going to get in too much trouble,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly.
It's not like, hey, you know, you're going to go to the University of Toronto and, oh, crap, let's see what kind of trouble you can get in there, right?
Yeah, you're going to Iowa, it's pretty much football, school, and then the odd party and stuff like that. But don't get me wrong, I had a blast. I had a great time while I was down there. But, yeah.
Well, I can empathize with you because I went down to Fresno. Mm-hmm. My brother was at Fresno State.
Okay.
I went to Fresno City College, and as it was down there, quite a distance around. I had my brother to latch on to, but, you know, he was doing his own thing, so I had to kind of develop my own thing. I was down at the City College there, and he was at the State. So it was different, and you do become, you know, as much as the glitz and the glamour of being in, you know, a big city playing for, you know, getting a U.S. scholarship, there's that emotional attachment to your hometown or to the people you know. You're in a foreign area and you're just like, crap, because they do weird stuff.
So yeah.
Now we shouldn't say weird. They do stuff differently down the States.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So there are some things, and I'll just give you an example of, you know, one of the things that when I was down there, you know, they, it's just for language, right? So language, you know, I'd be down in California, and we'd be talking to the volleyball team, the girls' volleyball team, and they'd be asking, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, oh, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And, you know, when I was with my friends, people would say, okay, yeah, let's go out and get pissed drunk tonight. So they turned to me, and I said, oh, I want to get pissed. Well, in California, that meant something different. That meant getting mad. So everybody looked at me, and they stopped, like, what's wrong with this dude, man? He just wants to get mad? I don't drink anymore, but that's not what stopped me. But just how about the culture shock? Like, tell me a little about some of the things that kind of shocked the crap out of you going to a different city and country.
I think, and I don't want to stereotype or put Americans in a certain category in regards to understanding different cultures in different countries and things like that, but I was like literally perplexed. Some of the questions they'd ask me about Canada. They'd ask me, do you guys celebrate Canada up there? Do you guys actually live in igloos?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what other, like, it's just, we are literally a border across from each other.
Yeah.
And some of the questions, just like the lack of knowledge for anything outside the U.S. was just mind-blowing.
Well, I can tell you, too, you know, I may have perpetuated some of those stereotypes by telling them, yes, we do live in England. So I know when we went down to the U.S. as high school wrestlers, we'd billet with some of the American kids, and they'd ask us all sorts of things about the USA or Canada. And we would tell them, like, I got a polar bear as a pet. And, you know, as far as outlandish as that sounds, you think about today's day and age, people have ferrets for pets, they have everything. So these poor American kids are being
100%
indoctrinated.
Yeah. And they did ask me, do you have penguins? Do you guys see a lot of penguins and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. I'm like, up in Antarctica, but not Toronto, where I'm from.
So yeah, a little bit of a culture shock in that way. So you're homesick. You're having a little bit of a I guess the first year. I mean, did you want to come back home?
Like you were actually, I did. Mm-hmm. I remember, and it didn't help because my roommate, who was from Louisiana, he didn't want to be there either. He was homesick. He would actually miss practice during 2 days and stuff like that because he was so homesick. And I actually had to tell my coach. I'm like, listen, I'm homesick. I'm further away than this guy, and he at least can make local calls. Everything for me is like long distance, extremely long distance. So I'm like, either I get a new roommate or something has to be done because I can't be like this because it's putting a lot of pressure on myself. I know I was homesick, and I seriously thought about just saying no, but I know one thing, I won't say I had a come to Jesus type moment, but
oh, yeah.
I literally thought to myself, I remember I sat down and I spoke with my brother,
yeah.
and he just kept telling me all the hard work that you've done. This is something that you've talked about since you're in grade 10. He said, all the hard work that you've done, do not, quote unquote, piss it away because you're afraid, you're homesick. Like, you would definitely regret coming back
mm-hmm.
if you ended up leaving. Because I was like, I'll just come back and go to University of Western or something. I'm mm-hmm. like, and he was like, no, you're not going to do that.
No.
He said, I'll kick your ass with my Reggie if you do come back. So.
Well, it's great that you had somebody to bounce that off of.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't have a brother, if you didn't have that father figure, your mother to bounce that off of, you probably would have
come probably, back. Yeah, probably, yeah. Because there was a few guys in my recruit class, there's one young gentleman who's an offensive lineman. He was a highly recruited offensive lineman out of Texas, and he ended up quitting.
Yeah.
Right after training camp, 2 weeks training camp, he ended up quitting.
Yeah.
Going back to Texas.
So it wasn't the physical portion of practice that was pushing you to go back home. It was the mental aspect.
It was the mental aspect, and I think that's one thing. And again, you really don't talk about mental health back then.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much they just tell you suck it up and figure it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And hindsight 2020, I kind of did kind of suck it up and figure it out, but I did have an older brother to bounce certain things off of to kind of help me in that regard. So,
yeah, a little bit of a support system.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
That's good. That's awesome. So let's go into the second year because you didn't start the first year.
Nope, redshirted my freshman year, mm-hmm. and then that's
stop for a second.
Yep.
For those Canadian viewers, let's tell them what redshirting means. I know what it means.
Yeah. So redshirt is where you are on the team, but technically you're not allowed to play. So you don't lose a year eligibility to play.
Mm-hmm.
You have 4 years to play, and so you can practice with the team, you can travel with the team, but you can't play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like a learning year.
Okay.
For you. So.
Perfect. So we got that out of the way.
Yep.
Your redshirt year, your very first year. Now, boom, your eligibility starts to tick away.
Yep.
What happens the second year?
Second year, had a really good training camp. I actually stayed up during the summer because the coaches that recruited me, they all got fired.
Mm-hmm.
So new coaches came in. So it's like a proving ground again for myself.
Okay.
Again, went to training camp, stayed up over the summer, trained for most of the summer. Training camp went really well. I earned a backup defensive end role
mm-hmm.
With the team. So got to travel with the team and play in a bunch of games.
Mm-hmm.
Second year went fairly well for me.
Mm-hmm. So you're playing, let's go here. NC2As, mm-hmm. Division I.
Yep.
Okay, you're in the big leagues.
Yep.
Your first game, where you started. Where you got on that field? Doesn't that maybe not when you started, when the first time you got on that field? Which team was it? And just tell me.
So it was a season opener. We flew down to Texas because Fort Worth, Texas, to play TCU, Texas Christian University.
Mm-hmm.
It was extremely hot. I remember getting off the plane and just the heat wave. I was like, oh my God, I thought summer in Iowa was hot, but this mm-hmm. was like a different type of heat. It was mm-hmm. a night game too, so we were pretty fortunate. I remember it vividly. Just the crowd, the atmosphere, the energy. I was a little, I don't know, shell-shocked at the beginning, but once you get out there and start playing, it's regular football. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah,
before.
The lights in disappear.
Yeah, you start disappears. You just focus in on playing. So
what you got to do?
Yep.
Yeah. So did you start that game or was it
periodically? Periodically, I got rotated in and stuff. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was still considered an undersized defensive lineman because I had lost a lot of weight, but I was still pretty strong and athletic. So
mm-hmm.
they positioned me around in certain areas to kind of free me up.
Mm-hmm.
They really liked my pass rush skills. I remember during my redshirt year, I'd always have to go against the first team offense. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the offensive linemen there would compliment me because of how good I was mm-hmm. With my pass rush skills and things like that. So,
and were you doing the same thing as you were doing in Pop Warner, or not Pop Warner, but the junior football, watching the games and studying your position still to that day? Eh?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So it was still, you were still studying.
Yep.
It wasn't you weren't watching the games for the fun.
I'd be very technical in regards to my footwork, my hand placement, how fast I could get off the ball, mm-hmm. things like that. So.
Not even, no YouTube, man.
No YouTube.
Can you imagine what you would have been like if you had YouTube?
I know.
Yeah. You folks that are watching this now, you have no idea what kind of luxury you have when it comes to YouTube and viewing techniques. Because they have techniques all over.
All over.
Football, rugby, wrestling, you name the sport.
Yep.
Somebody's got a how-to video on how to do that.
Oh, 100%.
They got videos on how to edit these things and what the lighting's like. I mean, it's crazy. You don't. You just have to go and type whatever you want.
Yeah, and I'll pop up.
So now you're doing it before YouTube.
Exactly.
Pretty crazy, man. So you were doing that still as you're an athlete there at the University of Iowa.
Yep,
Iowa State. Sorry. Yeah, can't confuse the two.
Some
people that don't know NCAA, you know what, they're NCAA. Division one and division two. The division one is a top tier.
Yep.
Right, and then you have the division two, division three.
Yep.
So you got a full ride.
Yep.
And you're enjoying this full ride. First year again, your red shirt. Second year, you're seeing some time on the field. What happens the third year?
So third year, this is where things kind of took a turn, but it actually took a turn for the better.
Mm-hmm.
So the coaches, and back then. And it's still to this day. Your scholarship is year to year.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't know that until after that year, the new coaches wanted to bring in players that they recruited because they didn't bring in a lot of the guys that were already on the team and they were trying to continue to build up the team. So they originally wanted me to switch positions and switch the offensive line. And I'm like, their philosophy was, Alfonso, you're very athletic. We think you could be an outstanding guard. We need you to put on another 50 to 60 pounds and play offensive guard. I'm like, yeah, no, that's not happening. So that being said, they told me if you can stay, we want you to stay, but if you're not going to play that, then you may want to look to go somewhere else. So that's when I started looking at other schools. Mm-hmm. And back then, when you would transfer, if you transferred to another Division I school, you lose your eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I was like, I already redshirted 1 year. I played my redshirt freshman year. I didn't want to lose that on my sophomore year. I just wanted to play football. I didn't want to have to sit out here. So I know Eastern Michigan and Western Michigan both reached out to have me transfer there and play.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew that I'd lose a year eligibility and then I'd just have my junior and senior year left, technically.
Yeah.
But one of my coaches from Iowa State, he was a head coach at a Division II school called Morningside.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in probably the number one conference in America for Division II football.
Yep.
So North Dakota, North Dakota State, Northern Colorado, St. Cloud State, Mankato State University, like a lot of top tier Division II schools were in this conference, and their conference had won the national championship I think 3 or 4 years in a row.
Nice.
Teams from that league won 3 or 4 years in a row, and they sent a lot of guys to the NFL. Mm-hmm. Guys that I played against. So he literally called me up and said, Alphonse, if you transfer to Morningside, I'll let you play whatever you want, whatever position you want. We'll give you your own room so you could have your own room as a recruit here.
Mm-hmm.
So spoke to my brother, spoke to the family, and it was in Sioux City, Iowa, which was just a little north of Ames, Iowa, where Iowa State was. So went down there for a recruiting visit, spoke to the defensive coaches. They were really pushing hard for me to come there. So I ended up transferring there.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're still able to follow your passion. I mean, we go through life and we face adversity. And then it's a measure of character when you say, you know what? No, I'm done.
Yeah.
Or I'm not putting up with this crap. Screw
exactly.
you guys.
Exactly.
But you were able to find an avenue to pursue and go from there. So let's talk about that year or that transfer, man. So a little bit, I guess, how were you feeling about the transfer?
I was a little pissed off at first because I had made some really good friends at Iowa State. I liked the school, liked the campus, liked the life. But I think I kind of put things in perspective to where, you still want to play at the highest level, technically, Division I level football, but where was the best option for me to play right away and be in an environment that's going to be supportive to me both physically, mentally, and academically was actually a really good school.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my thought process in being, you know what, didn't want to lose a year eligibility. I could have went to another Division I team and played, but
mm-hmm.
My whole mindset was I didn't want to sit out a year. I wanted to play right
away. And you didn't have to because you went to D1?
I dropped down a level, so
nice.
you don't lose your eligibility.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
So first practice with them, how's that going?
It was great.
Yeah.
All the guys were extremely welcoming and warm and stuff. It's funny because they said they had put in the recruitment letter that when I was coming there that I was 6'3", 240 pounds. Mm. I'm like, what? I'm not 6'3".
Well, you shrank.
Yeah. Yeah. So they got there like, oh, they said that you were 6'3". I'm like, no, dude, I'm like 6'1" if on a good day.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, they put you in your press package and they'll say, you know, 6'3", or I know I had in mind it was something. Yeah, it was outlandish. I think it was 6'1", and I'm not 6'1".
Yeah. Exactly. So, like, I'm not even close.
Yeah. So pretty cool, man. And then so you're playing for them, and how does it feel? You're starting for them?
Yep. Started at defensive end, outside linebacker. Team wasn't the strongest, but we competed against all those top teams that we played against.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good. I really enjoyed my time there. Campus was small, which was good. Football was really good. It was really good football playing there. So, yeah, we played against some really good players.
And what did you, in school, what did you go, what did you take? What was your major?
Business.
Business, nice.
Yeah, I studied business, so business management, and I minored in history. So, I always had a passion for
history,
so I took a minor in history.
Nice. American history, too, I bet.
Yeah, it was American history.
No, I took American history. I didn't minor in it, but I will tell you the one course that I didn't go through, I started watching it. You know, we were learning about American history.
Yeah.
And then as I'm sitting there and they're going through the lesson plans and whatnot, it was like watching Forrest Gump. Because that was a historical perspective of one person.
Yeah.
But I was watching, they're talking about the Forrest Gump movie, man. Like, what is this? So sorry, that was just my little storyline that it inserts there for a little comedic.
Right.
So you're senior year, your final year. How does that go?
Good. So going into my senior year, I was actually starting to get some interest from a few NFL teams because being in the northern part of the U.S., so like teams like Minnesota was pretty close to us. So I had gotten contacted by my coaches that Vikings were interested in me as a player and stuff. So had a pretty good senior year. Was invited after the end of the senior year. I was invited to the CFL combines, which was in Winnipeg. So I got contacted by a few teams, and then I guess the director of the CFL combines called me and said that they were going to fly me out to Winnipeg and test out there and stuff like that. So
nice.
Yeah.
So football is done collegiately. You're starting to maybe think about professional. How does it go for you?
Combines went fairly well. Leading up to, I guess, once I was done football, I had injured my knee my junior year. I had torn my meniscus, had surgery at the end of the season, and then going into my senior year, I think probably 3 games into the season, I had to get my knee scoped again to clean it out because I was having issues with my knee, but...
Yeah.
Still was playing fairly well. Probably should have took a little more time after I got my knee scoped, but hindsight 2020, you're young and dumb and you just want to play. So I kind of sped up the process and ended up just playing literally a week after I had my knee scoped, which wasn't the smartest, but you live and you learn.
Yeah.
But yeah, went to the combines, tested out fairly well there. Getting ready for the draft, got a phone call that the Argos were interested in me, most likely going to draft me. Draft came, didn't get drafted. So that was pretty much quite a bummer for me.
Yeah, can imagine.
Yeah,
sitting there and not being told that you would, and then
then it doesn't happen. So it was a learning process, and had a conversation with my agent at the time, and I guess he had a conversation with some teams in regards to my health. mainly my knee.
So he shot you in the foot?
Yeah, kind of. So
you already had the bad knee,
yeah,
but he shot
exactly.
you in the foot.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like, well, come and talk to me because I'm training and working out. They tested me out there and I was fine, so, but they had some questions in regards to how my knee was and stuff, so,
Well, and back then, too, with injuries, and we've progressed quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
But some of the surgeries back then were archaic.
Very.
I can, you know, my dad, who was at Oklahoma State, when he blew his knee, they went into his knee and they took out the cartilage, and then the doctor said, well, you're going to do the same thing to your other knee. Let's open that up. And they did the other knee, too.
For no reason.
Yeah. So he had a healthy knee,
yeah.
but they went and opened it up. So he had these giant scars on his knee.
Yeah.
Something that's unheard of today. They would have never done anything like that.
No.
So it's progressed. But, I mean, again, if you're doing stuff like that, of course, the rehabilitation process is lengthy.
Yep.
Even, you know, my brother, when he was at Fresno State, blew his knee. Knock on wood, I haven't blown my knee.
Yeah.
But they made this huge incision on his knee and opened it up.
Yeah.
And he had what they called an unhappy triad, which is out of the four ligaments, three of them are completely torn. But again, the rehabilitation process is long.
Yeah.
You get back on. And I could see it. Like, you know, if you have knee operation and you're starting to think, well, I've got, you know, my eligibility is running out. Why would you you don't want to prolong it. You want to jump back into it.
Exactly.
And just being stupid.
Yep.
Kids.
Yep. 100%.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like you said, you kind of shoot yourself in the foot. But football, it comes to an end.
Yep.
As athletically, from what I understand, you start coaching as well.
Yes, I did.
How is the transition from football athlete to coach?
You know what? It was actually a lot.
That was done. Keep going.
Okay, no. To be honest with you, it was actually quite enjoyable and not as, I don't want to say it was difficult trying as a kind of a former player and then becoming a coach. But you learn how to communicate a lot better. And just, it was a little bit of a transition from that period because you're teaching, because I started in high school, so you're teaching kids. Some kids have more abilities than others. Some kids have played football, some haven't played football. So when it comes across kind of telling kids terminology and different techniques and things like that, some kids understand it, some kids don't. So you got to kind of be able to adjust to both levels of experience when it comes to coaching. So
yeah. Are you glad that you made the transition to coaching?
Yes, I am.
Keeps you close to the sport?
Yeah, exactly. I really enjoy it. And now I'm not coaching contact. I'm doing more flag football for my younger son, who's 10. So I've been doing that since he was probably about 5 or 6.
Nice. So you're continuing the Carter dream.
Yeah. And he really enjoys it, too. So
that's the best thing.
Yeah.
Right? So. If he's enjoying it and he's going to have his passion in it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get to sit back as your dad, as his dad to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
Exactly. It's great watching the process. So.
Well, Alfonso, thank you for coming on the show.
Awesome.
Great
thank
talking
you.
To you. You know, I love hearing about the entire journey that you had. It's pretty cool.
Appreciate it.
Though that you faced adversity and you were able to come back and do some coaching. Fantastic.
Awesome.
Thank you.